There's nothing that's free, people. Like, there's nothing that's free. Instagram is not free. Twitter is not free. None of this is free. In fact, you're expending the most valuable thing that you have in your entire life, which is time. And you're giving them your time. Like, huge mistake. Huge mistake. What are you doing? And I'm guilty of this. I'm totally guilty of this. So they're going to continue to harvest that as long as they can. They're not going to stop. Why would they stop? It makes them rich. They're definitely going to keep doing that. But we have the ability to fork off of that nonsense and to go build something that's more meaningful. You know, it's like America, the idea versus America, what it is right now. You can't kill the idea of America. They've captured it physically, but they can't kill the mind virus idea of what America is. And so we have to go continue to build that elsewhere. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's going to be both, right? We're in a fight. We're in a fight right now between the unconscious and the conscious. Now, I say that, I'm not trying to be arrogant. I'm just saying like Matrix, you know what I mean? Like, he wakes up and he looks around and all these people are in the pods and they're just like, derp, you know, it's this what's happening right now. You know, there are people who are watching The Housewives of Beverly Hills. Like, what? What are you doing? What are we doing? So it really comes down to the individual, I guess, is what I'm saying. We get to choose. I am not giving you $15 and then watching 10 minutes of this and being like, that was trash. That's a horrible trade. Like, this is a bad business. You know, back in the day when movie tickets were like $6, or I could go to Blockbuster and rent a movie for like $5. Like, okay, you know, all right. But digitally, like, I don't want to take that risk. So if I can just split the value up into tiny little chunks, I'm much more likely to take a chance on a movie if the risk is a half a penny or 5 pennies or 10 cents or whatever. Way more, like, fine, no problem. I'm not doing $15. I'm sorry. I don't care that this is a studio movie. Like, I'm frustrated by that experience.
Well, now that we're talking about Indie Huff and talking a little bit about the problem also, I want to get a little bit more, let's say, technical, because people probably are thinking, okay, but how this actually works. So I have been researching as a good Bitcoiner about your website. And so you propose Indie Huff as the solution and also Bitcoin. So first I want to ask you about why Bitcoin, although you touched a little bit about this, but also I have seen something that... that's called that stream money like data. So what does that mean? And how do per second payments, revenue splits, and I don't know, direct distributions empower creators or individual filmmakers? Well, it actually give them some kind of sovereignty, right?
Yeah. Great question. So I guess we can attack the why Bitcoin and then feel free to get me back on track when I forget the other questions.
No worries.
Bitcoin, why Bitcoin? Because Bitcoin is permissionless. So right now on IndieHub's website, right? So right now we're in the beta version. We're in the very early version of this, and it is admittedly centralized.
So interesting. Sorry about that. The app just totally crashed. But now that I'm on the web browser version, it's got a totally different gamma setting on the camera. Man, so annoying. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Yeah, it just hard crashed. Take two.
Why Bitcoin? You said like how Indie Hub is structured. How is it not different to FX? But where the difference comes? And then you started talking about streaming, like per second, if somebody's.
Yeah. Watching. Yeah, because I want to lead this in and so in the end of the road that I want to take is that what are the obstacles that the indie filmmakers face today and why is good idea to use Bitcoin and Indie Hub? So that's why I ask you that question.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So. So we use Bitcoin because Bitcoin is permissionless. You know, the way that the website works right now, let's say we're not using Bitcoin. Let's say we're using Stripe. Let's say you were using a credit card processor. They get to dictate what payments go across their rails. And if Stripe with a P boots me out, I don't have a lot of recourse on Bitcoin. If the current processing company that I'm using decides to boot me off their network, I can just go use another one. I can just plug in with a different thing. It's open source, it's free, it's permissionless. The thing that matters more than anything is the flow of capital, the flow of money, the flow of attention. Like, I can't pay my rent on likes, you know? Like, cool, I got a million likes on YouTube on this thing. Like, that doesn't mean I get to go continue to make movies. That doesn't mean much to me.
So the thing that matters the most is that the payment system is accessible and decentralized and that we can plug into it whenever we need to. The way that the system works now is we basically, for every second that an audience member is watching a filmmaker's film, we're calculating that revenue. I forget if it, before it cut, I think I had explained that it's centralized, right? Like we're serving the data. Did you guys hear that? Okay. So we're serving the data. We're serving the films. That's really not different than the current scheme. The major difference that I'm focused on with this beta version is that the payments is fair and as decentralized as possible. Filmmakers, generally speaking, especially independent filmmakers, are not, there's not accountants, there's not bookkeepers, there's not lawyers. When you finish a movie, you're at the 50-yard line. You have to now go sell that movie. That's a whole nother career. That's a whole nother, you know, group of talent. That's a whole nother category of skill that you have to figure out how to learn. And it makes it very difficult. So if I'm lucky enough to have finished, let's say, a documentary on Bitcoin and I go to Netflix and they decide to license it from me, which is rare that you get a licensing deal that would even remotely cover the cost of the budget, like rarely happens. But let's say I did. I am now I'm still tasked with, okay, I got to audit it. I got to figure out how many views it has, which they don't tell you on Netflix. Some other platforms they do. But then when that revenue comes in, I now, okay, I got to check to my movie LLC. Well, now I got to take the revenue that's in there and I got to distribute that revenue according to the operating agreement that I created when I started the movie. I got to pay the EP back. I got to and these get very complicated. You know, for instance, music rights are an absolute nightmare in the film business because for every song that you want to get the rights to, you have two different sides. You have two different legal sides of that song. You have masters and you have publishing. And on either side of those, there could be like 15 people involved. Maybe it's one person, maybe it's people and a company. If I want to, I'm just making this up to make a point, but let's say I want to go get a Led Zeppelin song and okay, I got to deal with masters and publishing. And so obviously they have massive record labels that I have to negotiate with, but let's say, you know, whoever like John Bonham, right? I also have to deal with John Bonham's estate because he's dead. So who took over the rights to his revenue after his death? Well, what if he had like 15 kids? Now we got to deal with like 15 kids.
More complicated worse than the set of lights after Christmas that you take from.
So that's actually the real reason why now that James Gunn is using his score instead of his famous music list in the films as well.
If I'm picking up what you're throwing down, it's why Prince was the artist formerly known as Prince. You know, because the way the business works is he didn't have the rights to his music and he was like, fuck you, I'm gonna. They're like, you can't use the name Prince. He's like, I am Prince. Okay, fine. The artist formerly known as, right? So all this is a nightmare, right? If you're just like one dude and I made a doc on Bitcoin and I'm like trying to like, you know, go about my life or whatever, like good luck, bro. So what I'm trying to solve is let's create some payment splits. Let's automate the process of payments for filmmakers. It makes it a lot easier when you're at the end of the project to just say, hey, you're a great actor. I'm going to give you 5%. Okay. It's going to be simple. We're just going to type it in 5%, boom. Every second of attention, you're going to get 5% of that. You're going to get 5% of the value of the attention that is given to your film. And it makes it easier. I can talk to anybody I want. I can say the sound guy, hey, I can't pay your day rate. I can't pay $1,000 a day, but I'll give you $500 a day and I'll give you 1%. I'm like, okay, that's an easier negotiation. So it solves the complexity of distributing revenue and it solves the centralization risk of if you're not saying what they want you to say, they're going to cut you off from the payment system. We've already experienced this through all of COVID. Bitcoin is the most decentralized way to do that. You know, if Netflix creates their own coin or you go to Mark Cuban's coin, there's a couple movie coins out, right? You know, like you're beholden to their whole worldview. You know, that's not solving that. That doesn't solve the problem at all. That's more of the same problem. Bitcoin solves that. Right now it's a centralized service, mostly because educating every filmmaker in the world about Bitcoin is excruciating and it's going to take time. And they just want to upload their movie and get paid and do it in the easiest way possible. So I'm solving for that. Audience members are the same thing. The overwhelming majority of people don't have Lightning wallets. They don't use Bitcoin. They don't know how to get it. They don't know how to spend it. So fine. I'll take your credit card. You can pay me a monthly. That's fine. No big deal. But where we're going and the ultimate vision of this is that once people have the ability to easily manage an identity online and have a wallet full of sats, that they can connect that wallet full of sats directly to that film and the filmmaker's cap table and either buy it and stream the sats all at once, pay the sats all at once, or stream it, So you don't have to take the risk renting it. And those sats are streamed on a per segment or per second basis. So what I'm getting at is ideally IndieHub is not, I don't want to be involved in the payment processing business. I'm not really interested in that. I'm doing that right now just because it's easy, but I'm trying to get the boats to a different place where the audience is as directly connected to the filmmaker as they can possibly be. And then what we haven't talked about yet is the raising capital side of things. You know, we touched on it briefly with publicly traded companies, Disney, Netflix. Where are they getting their money? They're borrowing it from investment banks at nothing percent. And they're creating whatever propaganda they want to create to brainwash everybody with borrowed money that's free. What I would like to see is the ability for savvy audience members, or what I would call tastemakers, people who are really, maybe they're not professional filmmakers, but they have incredible taste. And they can be like, this filmmaker is going to hit. This filmmaker is going to hit. I'll give them $1,000. I'll give them $10,000. I'll give them $1,000,000, whatever. So you have an ecosystem of three parts. You have investors, audience members, and filmmakers. When you have that, those three things, the flywheel can go, the business can jumpstart itself, and we can go from there. Okay, and that was the Bitcoin question. What were the other ones?
Yeah, that it was very technical. What does stream money like data mean? And okay, how do per second payments, revenue split, and direct distribution power creators?
Okay, great question. So streaming money like we stream data. So the way that data is sent across the internet is not in one large package. If I send you a terabyte file, it's not like a helicopter comes and just drops it, you know, and then through your roof, you know, it splits it up into tiny little chunks called packets. And we blast those out. It's just light, right? That's why it's called streaming. We're streaming the data. Well, if you can chop value up in the same way that we chop data up, now we can stream the money as well. And there's a number of benefits to this that are outside of filmmaking, but from a filmmaking perspective, the way that I see it is that the obvious answer to this is that it reduces the risk of rentals. Like, I don't rent things because I am not giving you $15 and then watching 10 minutes of this and being like, that was trash. That's a horrible trade. Like, this is a bad business. You know, back in the day when movie tickets were like $6, or I could go to Blockbuster and rent a movie for like $5. Like, okay, you know, all right. But digitally, like, I don't want to take that risk. So if I can just split the value up into tiny little chunks, I'm much more likely to take a chance on a movie if the risk is a half a penny or 5 pennies or 10 cents or whatever. Way more, like, fine, no problem. I'm not doing $15. I'm sorry. I don't care that this is a studio movie. Like, I'm frustrated by that experience. And then that also allows us to stream that revenue to filmmakers and audience members and investors all over the world who are related to that project. Mm-hmm. So Lightning allows us to chop up the data in the same way that Lightning allows us to chop up the value, the Bitcoin, into tiny little fractions, and we can send them in real time in the way that we send the data. So the data and the value are now linked. You're sending the value on top of the data, which has a lot of interesting ramifications outside of IndieHub, but we can get into those later.
One more, why Bitcoin? Okay, Lightning is a second layer over Bitcoin, right? But you cannot make such tiny micropayments with any other solution existing out there, only Lightning Network, in such a speed, right?
That's not completely true.
Okay.
So when I first got into crypto, when I first got in the crypto world, I couldn't have told you the difference between Bitcoin or Ethereum or XRP or Cardano. I had no idea. Technically, I had zero clue. It took me about 2.5-3 years to like really understand the difference. So when the first proof of concept of IndieHub I built on a technology that was called Interledger. Interledger is essentially I don't even know if it's still around, but it was a value transfer protocol. It did not have a coin attached to it, but you could use any payment and receive any payment. It's a pretty cool piece of tech. It was designed in part by one of the guys who was one of the original developers of XRP, of the XRP ledger. One of the actual devs, this guy's name is Stefan Thomas. The XRP ledger as a piece of software, forget Ripple the company, I'm just talking about XRPL, the tech, actually had payment channels, which is exactly, more or less exactly how Lightning works. I'm not saying on a technical level, I'm not saying the code is the same, I'm just saying the result is the same, where you could open up a private channel between me and Shalale, and you and I could stream value back and forth at 50,000 transactions per second for free. So actually, there are a few chains that allow you to do this, that you can create IOUs on the chains. It's just that they're all centralized, right? They're not Bitcoin. So like cool, but it's not really that decentralized. And so one of the things that really orange pilled me was back in the day, I was like, okay, I want to stream, you know, before I was a hardcore maxi, I want to stream value to the point of this question. I wanted to chop up the payments like we're chopping up the data. You couldn't do that on Bitcoin at the time. Lightning didn't exist. It wasn't sophisticated. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll do this on the XRPL. And it worked great. It was awesome. But when I started to get further into that world, I said, hey, I want to participate in this network. How can I run a node? I want to run an XRPL node and, you know, maybe host everything for IndieHub on this node and participate in the payments on the network. And ultimately what I found out, of course, was like, well, that's not possible. It was like, okay, if you want to do that, it's going to require, you're going to need like a 24 bay, you know, SSD RAID, and you're going to need like a 100 gigabit uplink, and you're going to need enterprise IT experience, and it's going to cost like $100,000. You know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it was like, what? You know, and then I started to understand, oh, this is why the Bitcoiners are just won't shut the fuck up about this little node. Like, oh, I get it. I can just download it. Like anyone can do it. You know, I was naive at that time. So it was one of the things that really orange-pilled me. I know I'm being hyper-technical, but there are some other solutions that exist to this. They're just not Bitcoin. They're not built on a decentralized tech.
They're dinos, decentralized in name only.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And it's no different than a regular database, right? Like I can just build a database that just tracks value and then remits payment. Like that's not that complicated. It's just all going to end up central. It's either decentralized or it's not, you know?
Absolutely. Shalali, do you want to ask something?
Yeah, I think I just want to add to what you said, like how you nicely, for me, it was not so technical, hopefully for the audience as well, how you nicely explained how the streaming works, right? I think you are paying. There is also this expression, pay per use. So you are, in theory, giving me a chance to decide whether I want to buy it, rent it, maybe as a gift for, let's say, for Juan. But it is me who decides. You are not forcing me to do anything. And this is so sad to see everything that's surrounding us. Like Uncle Klaus Schwab said, you own nothing and you will be happy, right? Sorry, so we are just renting things. We are not owning anything. We don't own our sovereignty, our decisions, nothing, literally. So at least here you are bringing back the basic. Yeah, I pay for what I use. And if later, because you build this kind of trust, okay, if I like it, then it's on me, my decision, what I want to do with it. But the question is, for example, how will it benefit the creator? So maybe after some time they will see that, okay, there are too many people just maybe playing with the platform, testing it, or maybe there will be even bots, or I don't know what kind of issues that, you know, there is a streaming of, let's say, first 20, 30, maybe minutes. The movie's, let's say, 2 hours. Let's imagine that you have long form content as well. And then they will say, okay, I don't want to work with you anymore because it doesn't work this way. The Bitcoin is also very volatile. The price is changing a lot. It doesn't bring me anything. I don't want this business model. I prefer the bet. The pain with Netflix than staying here, or I will try to do something else. Do you think, is there such a risk? Have you thought about it, for example?
Yeah, definitely. You know, this isn't, you know, IndieHub is not going to solve, we're not going to be scaled up fast enough. You know, you go make $1 million movie or $2 million movie or $10 million movie. Like right now, IndieHub is not the place for you. You know, we don't generate that amount of revenue for filmmakers at all. Like we're very, very early. So essentially all I can do in that circumstance is tell the filmmaker, hey, I'm not doing what every other streaming company is doing, which is essentially just a licensing deal. If you want to upload it here, you can upload it here. If you want to unpublish it in 5 seconds and remove it from the platform, that's totally up to you. That's you're in control. I'm not buying the rights to this movie from you. You can do whatever you want. I'm just trying to facilitate
you
attention.
You are building the bridge, kind of giving the ground and the bridge for them.
Yeah, exactly. So ultimately, I want to outcompete. I want people to be on IndieHub because it's the best place for them to be. And it's because that's where they make the most money. And it's where the discerning audiences are that are going to enjoy and watch their projects. I have to be able to try to compete on those grounds. And if filmmakers want to do something exclusively with us, that's up to them. And we can figure out a deal or whatever, but it has to be, you know, consensual. Netflix, the way it works right now, let's say most people want to get on Netflix because that's where the exclusivity was. That's where the cachet was. Filmmakers want eyeballs. And it was like, well, if I release it on YouTube, Netflix is never going to want it because Netflix doesn't get to claim any kind of exclusivity. So there was like a chain of where you tried to get your movie released on. So you started at the top. And if you were lucky enough, Netflix says, okay, we'll give you whatever. We'll give you $15,000 and You know, we'll keep it on here for a year. There's no residuals. But we're not going to tell you.
Short-term thinking, right? Because it might feel like strategic, tactical move now, but in the end, it's like a very fatal, let's say, mistake in the long term. And in this sense, what you are saying, being very direct and firm about it, first of all, you also give this data access to the creator. So as you were mentioning before, a couple of times, you actually highlighted it, Netflix doesn't share this information with the creator. So they have no idea what's happening. With it's like giving away your baby. You have no idea about the future, like no right to check. The only thing you can do is to have more babies, to produce more movies. But what you are also giving as a difference is the data. And if, in theory, what you said sounds pretty cool, I think, to all the filmmakers, if they want to do something exclusive, maybe if they want to add extra feature based on this data, maybe they can do that, right? Because you have the ground, you have the bridge, you have the... So
yeah, and ideally give them access to the audiences that are resonating with their work.
I want to also deep dive a little bit more into the Netflix issue, let's say issue. So people are more aware about the problem. And because, as Silali mentioned, it's actually a pretty big issue. So I want to talk about what will come in the short-term future time frame, because what does it mean for Hollywood when so much creativity and, you know, financial power, in this case Netflix, is concentrated in one studio? What we can expect from now on, how it's going to be, and also how this concentration of power affects, you know, creators in general, not just independent, or even theatrical releases, or even the diversity of stories that the audience get to see it, right?
Yeah, I think that the structure of what's about to happen, you can back into it by looking at what happens in any market throughout all of history when you have monopolistic practices or centralized control over the means of production. You can call it communism, you call it socialism, whatever, monopolies. There's basically two ways. There's a free and open market whereby the decision-making is decentralized, and then there are systems where it's not. And the systems where it's not, no matter what the product is, the price goes up and the quality goes down. You know, you could look at it like a jungle. You know what I mean? Like a jungle is a hyper competitive, hyper volatile, when you're down on the jungle floor, crazy octagon battle for life. But you zoom out and it looks like this incredibly healthy ecosystem, and there's so much light, it's teeming with life. That's what we want. We want the freest market possible, because that produces the strongest creatures, the best ideas, the most interesting products. Filmmaking is no different. So as they continue to go down the line here, we're going to be corralled into some buckets, because basically this is a little more of an insidious topic, but that's they want us thinking and behaving and feeling a particular way so they can manipulate us. And they control the means of production here, literally. You don't get to invest in a movie. You don't get to decide and participate in what gets created. That's a handful of people who have the ability to borrow at nothing percent, who have access to public markets and capital markets that none of us have access to. But you don't get access to public markets without playing the game. It just doesn't happen. So everything is going to be tightly controlled. What I say in this conversation with people is I ask them what the difference is between art and propaganda. And the difference comes down to who is writing the check. And so you can use a camera. It's just a tool. It's like a gun. You can use it for good. You can use it for evil. And so the material will continue to get dumbed down, and it will continue to become more bland, no different than our food, no different than a slice of bread. At one point, it was a pretty healthy, interesting thing with a lot of different, you know, microbes on it and a lot of different nutritional value. And then you get to Wonder Bread, which is basically, I don't even know what it is, like white paint, you know, right? And so the same thing is happening with the content. I hate that word, but the content. You're consuming content. Like, what does that mean? It's like a Soylent Green. Like, what does that mean? It's so ridiculous. So it's going to continue to get worse. It's going to have less nutritional value. It's going to make you think less. It's going to dumb you down more. And that's partly by design. I'm not saying that it's 100% that way, but it's the influence of that is definitely there. I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Here, then this kind of dystopian future reality can open the door for people who have enough And they will say, I don't want to consume this thing at all, though they have the crave for it, as your favorite consuming content. So they will try to find some niche solutions, niche production studios or streaming services or whatever, like projects very similar to IndieHub, right? So there is always like in nature, the yin and yang, all this evil that will be, unfortunately, probably for the majority of the time, the biggest, the loudest, because of how ugly and depressing it is, it will actually open the door for everyone else to kind of handle it anymore. And then it will actually help something else to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. More or less, basically. Yes. What's happening right now is it can't happen any other way. And it's fundamentally necessary for it to happen because it's waking up a particular group of people and incentivizing them to behave in a different way, to make different, better choices, to build a new system outside of the old corrupt one. So, you know, in my opinion, everything is subordinate to creation itself. The darkness works for the light by definition, and you don't have to participate in abject darkness. You just make a choice not to. That doesn't mean that there, you know, it, the darkness galvanizes the light and puts it back on mission. You know, it's part of the game. It's part of the game. And so we get to go build something new because the old thing sucks. And that's a lot of fun. And that's what we're here for, right? We're these little creative beings who can transmute energy from here to there and build cool new things. And we're in a totally different world. The technology has changed everything. And so there has to be a new way to do it. And so it's exciting. You know, if you don't get lost in the cynicism and the pessimism, it's actually pretty awesome what's happening right now. We get to go do something that's very, very cool. So I'm hyped about it personally.
So now I was just thinking that if Bitcoin and when Bitcoin and IndieHub escape globally, how could both things reshape the way that storytelling, creative freedom, and cultural diversity works? You know, because you now know the problem, we now see the solution, but how can actually affect in the future when, let's say, that these things are completely scaled globally? Have you ever talked about it?
Yeah. So let me repeat. So I make sure I'm on the same page. So you're asking how these solutions will, or are you asking how they will work or what it will look like when they're working?
Exactly. How will it look like when they're working?
Okay. So what I would say, my assumption or presupposition on this, I guess, is that we'll end up being in a total renaissance. I personally think, I think that we're going into the greatest economic expansion in all of human history. There's probably some bumps before we get there. You know, it might get a little crazy between now and then. And I don't know the timing. Maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 25 years, maybe it's 50 years. I don't know. But what I do feel pretty confident about is that the other end of this is going to be the promised land, so to speak. We're going to have a more diverse ecosystem of human ideas and thought and expression than we have ever experienced ever. Because prior to this, most human beings, most civilizations were relatively isolated from each other. They were super decentralized, if you want to look at it that way. And we're going post-World War II is probably one of the most centralized periods in all of human history. And we're going back to a decentralized power structure globally, which is why things feel unstable. But on the other end of that, I think we can just talk from a movie perspective. I think that some of the best stories to have ever been told have yet to be told. Some of the best movies to have ever been made have yet to be made. AI is going to play a huge part in that. AI is incredibly advanced already with respect to filmmaking. And it's scary as hell. 20 plus years, more than that, 25, 30 years of my life, I have spent honing certain skills that are being, you know, kind of put by the wayside by AI. But that doesn't mean that human beings don't value storytelling. It's just the tools are different. So I think that we're going to have some of the best artists have an opportunity that they never had before to contribute to the world in a way that it was never possible before. You know, there's certain math around how many geniuses exist on the planet, and it's like a relatively fixed ratio. I mean, I'm probably messing this up, but for brevity's sake, like there's X geniuses per 1,000 people, let's say. Well, if there really are 8 billion people on the planet, then there should be a lot of geniuses, and those geniuses should be able to contribute. But they're not, because the system isn't designed for real competition to let the best and the brightest, to let the cream rise to the top. So if we're going into a world where Bitcoin is going to allow for competition, I think that I think that the world is going to look very different than it looks right now. And I think that there's a lot of people who are going to get brutally outcompeted by the smartest among us. And they're going to be pretty mad about that. And there's going to be a lot of like, this is very unfair. It's unfair. Life is unfair. But at the other end of that, if we allow for that to happen, we're going to have access to better everything than we would have had access to prior if we're just forcing and allowing the average among us to run everything. And so if you want to be successful in the film business or the storytelling business, you're going to have to compete, man, because we're going to a world where you got to compete and it's hyper competitive. You're not going to be able to just join a union and be like, I get my union rate and I get my residuals and I did one commercial a year. You know, it's going to be hyper competitive. So on the one hand, it's going to be a very different, much more competitive world. On the other hand, we're going to see some of the most mind-blowing, beautiful art that we've ever seen. And some of the most challenging ideas that will have ever been presented to continue to push us further and farther. So, you know, we've been spoon fed, right? Like let's say post-World War II United States, just because I can speak to that to some extent. You had three broadcast networks. You had ABC, NBC, CBS. Everybody was being programmed by the same shit. Everyone, you know, the water cooler conversation was the same conversation because everybody was watching the same thing. You now live in a world where your flatmate can be watching YouTube with some person on YouTube who's like wildly famous that I've never heard of. I don't know who the hell that is. Apparently they're huge. Apparently they're billionaires. I don't know. Right. So we're already seeing the evidence of the world decentralizing. And it's going to get more like a jungle, man. It's going to be like a jungle. And if you're able to zoom out, like down on the jungle floor, it's going to be kind of brutal, honestly. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of people who aren't really down for it because it's going to require a lot more of them than they've had to contribute in the past. But if you're able to zoom out, we're going to see an incredibly thriving species as we move forward into space and into this technological era. But I do think that there's a lot of people who are going to get taken out, so to speak, of the game. Because, you know, they're just going to be like, I'm, you know, back to the dopamine point. They're like, I'm just sitting here like looking at porn on AI for my whole life. Like you just wasted all the potential you had as a human being. So you're out of the game. Yeah, like exactly. Like you're not like, it's no different than somebody smoking crack under the 101. They've wasted their life. They're not in the game. I'm not competing with them. They're not contributing anything. It's a waste. So there's going to be a lot of people. No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Argue that it's been always like this. We don't know. It maybe also in medieval times and in even like Middle Ages. Super super long time ago. Maybe there were always these kind of personalities that there are people who just want to be led and told what to do, and they are very passive and they just exist like this. They don't expect anything else. Now we just see it on a bigger scale, and probably through the technology, there will be more noise. Everything will be more condensed and bigger and growing exponentially and sharper and so on. But on the other hand, probably the reality didn't really change. It's just like the scale stretch.
I agree with that. Except what I would say is that I think and I could be wrong here, but I think for the first time, Bitcoin offers, there's always going to be an X percent of people who are like, dude, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't want to compete. I don't care. You know, whatever. I'm doing my thing. That's fine. The difference is that all of those people don't have to be held back by an inbred king in a castle, right? Like the leadership gets to be the people who really are interested in competing and doing crazy shit technologically, making crazy movies, developing crazy tech. Bitcoin frees society so that the people who want to compete can compete, as opposed to, oh, you're a threat to me, so I'm just going to kill you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which will still happen, I guess.
The biggest difference, the first precedent like this, like the first case ever in humanity.
Yeah. So in the end, who benefits and who loses in a decentralized, creative, economic versus, you know, the traditional studio model?
For film, who benefits? The audience benefits first and foremost. Because we're going to have better stories. We're going to have better movies. Society benefits. Consciousness benefits. For filmmakers, it's going to be more competitive than ever. It's going to be more difficult than ever. But the rewards are going to be greater than ever. You'll have access to capital, but that capital will be intelligent. Nothing is going to be given. Everything is going to be earned. And the people who are able to crack that code and who respond and who society responds to the most are going to receive outsized reward It's going to be massive. I would say the Pareto principle is going to totally apply here. It's going to have an 80-20, right? 20% of the artists are going to generate and attract 80% of the revenue, maybe more. So the structure won't necessarily be different than it already is. It's just that, like we were saying before, it's not the corrupt at the top who have the money printer. It's hyper, you've earned that place at the top because of a hyper competitive vetting process that got you there. That was decided ultimately by the audiences themselves, because you couldn't have gotten that revenue had all of the people not given you their attention. It's a direct corollary. It's not this weird back end, stealing your attention by money printing and ads. Like, it's literally, if you generated that revenue, it's because somebody watched your thing. That's it. You know, I'm not offering an egalitarian world here. It's not. Like, the world is not. I'm sorry if you think that it is. But what I am offering is an opportunity to compete. If you think that you can compete and you have a good idea, by all means, go make your movie. The world needs you to try. We need you to try. But that doesn't mean that everybody's going to care. I can't control for that. That's up to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, how do you measure success in this model? Like, creative freedom, audience reach, revenue? Something else, because that's something that I was thinking also in how they give the prize in the Bitcoin phone fest as well. So how do you measure this?
It's a great question. That's a fantastic question. You always in the system I'm trying to build, you can't discount the revenue side of it, because the revenue is generated by attention. So that's always going to matter, right? You captured attention somehow. So that's always going to matter. But in my opinion, what success looks like is the ability for artists to take more risks more quickly and to iterate faster. So if we go back to, let's say, New York and the Neighborhood Playhouse, you had some of the greatest performance, the greatest performers in history, the greatest film actors and theater actors came out of a system where they were in an economic system in New York where they were able to rehearse and write and rehearse and write, and they were able to iterate to an immense degree, and they could put out a play and that play could generate some revenue, and nobody was necessarily getting rich on plays, but they got to practice. They got to rehearse. David Mamet got to write. They got to work on the things. Mamet sat there. They got to go back and forth and iterate and get better and better and better, faster and faster and faster.
And you're talking about Juilliard?
What?
Are you talking about Juilliard?
No.
The school? Okay.
I mean, sure. There was a few back there. Meisner had the Neighborhood Playhouse. You've got, you know, basically everything. Stanislavski comes down into New York in this period. But my point is more of an economic point, which is that these artists could iterate and they didn't have to work. They didn't have to allocate their time to doing anything else. They just got to iterate. So success to me is a world where if you're a student filmmaker and you put your movie on IndieHub and let's say it costs you $10,000 to make your short film, well, hopefully you could at least make half of it back, if not just make your 10 grand back, because that means you get to keep iterating. That means you get to keep getting better and better and better and better and better. If you go allocate that 10 grand and you never have an opportunity to make it back, well, now you got to go wait tables or whatever. So success to me is, can you iterate? Because the best of the best of the best of the best are not going to get there without decades of iterating. That's how everything works. The best athletes in the world, the best actors, the best artists, they got that way because they could afford 15 hours a day to their craft. We're in a system right now where people don't, it's a political system. And so they don't get to dedicate that many hours a day to their craft. They dedicate more hours to like kissing ass and trying to develop a following rather than being locked in a room studying the performance of acting. So to me, success looks like, can we sustain artists so that they can iterate and become the best version of themselves? And then everything will take care of itself after that. The market will take care of itself after that. Brilliant pieces of work that will captivate human beings all over the world. That's just a byproduct of artists being able to focus on their craft. So that's success, in my opinion.
Perfect. So Lali, do you have a last question? Otherwise, let's get out of here.
Let's get out. No. Maybe not the last question, but a message. You know, it's 2026, still the beginning of the new year. So what would be the message, call, short term, let's say? Short term, I mean, not in the next few decades. Zach, you have for both the creators, like the filmmakers, video makers. What would be the call for them and the audience as well? Any call out, any message, any request or wish, maybe? What do you wish for them?
This is like a meta quote. At the end of American History X, he basically has this great monologue, and he says, if somebody else said it best, just steal from them and go out strong. Winston Churchill is a solid quote here. Simple. It's a simple idea. Never, never, never quit. And really what I'm trying to say is don't succumb to cynicism. Don't succumb to pessimism. Continue forward, knowing that every challenge that you're going through is a gift to make you better, faster, stronger, smarter. Every challenge in your life is an opportunity. Do whatever you have to do in your life to orient yourself such that you truly understand that concept. Because until you really believe that, if you see every opportunity as a problem instead of every problem as an opportunity, you're fucked, frankly. Like, I'm just like, sorry to be direct, but your mindset is the only thing that matters. So don't quit. Figure out how to see the opportunities in every problem you have and continue forward. The juice is worth the squeeze. Like, get your relationship with yourself straight, because we need you. Humanity needs you. We need you to be the best version of yourself. It's worth something. So keep going.
That's pretty cool. So life happens like for you, not to you directly. So use it and yeah, keep moving forward, because every challenge is actually a chance. Beautiful. Cool. Thanks.
Nailed it. You nailed it.
Go on, you're the best. So decide. What's next?
Let's go to dinner.
Yeah, true, because you're Salvadoran. I'm just looking at my clock. If I would eat at this hour, I wouldn't probably sleep well. So
okay. Grass-fed ribeyes, I hope.
At this hour. Cool. But yeah, for cool one maybe. So enjoy. I guess for you, Zach, it's still pretty early.
Yeah, we got lunch here.
Lunchtime. Okay. No, I just want to finish with the shortest horror story ever, mate. Nah, just kidding. But have you read about it? It's super cool. I will remind this about a couple of days ago. And it says that the last man on earth sat alone in a room. There was a knock on the door. That's it.
It's horrifying.
Bail.
Oh, this is really cool. I'm working on this fiction book with 12 different stories. I think I will try to do something with that one, because it fits a very creepy, cool, intelligent story. So thank you.
It's obviously a velociraptor, and you're obviously in Jurassic Park 48.
Absolutely. Well, Zach, thank you very much for your time. Sileli, it was a pleasure to have you again. We will continue doing more of these episodes, guys. This is the first one of the year, but there's more to come. And yeah, see you on the regular schedule next week. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ciao, guys. Hold on, I need to do this to remind that here's going to be a cut.
Is it some kind of smartphone?
Yeah, because you know that when you do post, actually, I do that in the podcast. When I do the game, I also clap because it's going a good way. So I know that I need to put the clip of the previous guest. So
interesting. Sorry about that. The app just totally crashed. But now that I'm on the web browser version, it's got a totally different gamma setting on the camera. Man, so annoying. Yeah, whatever. Okay. It just hard crashed. Take two.